All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Wednesday, January 18th, and coming up this hour, we will talk to former state rep and now Dane County Circuit Judge Chris Taylor, along with former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski. Sarah Godlewski is going to join us occasionally to highlight women around the state who are civic leaders, community leaders, engaged in public service. Chris Taylor is doing that now by running unopposed for a seat on the State Court of Appeals. And so we're looking forward to that visit coming up at 7:30. Todd Albo will join us just after 7:45. If you want to send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com or give us a call, 844-967-2789. And you can follow the work that we do over at Up North News at upnorthnewswi.com or look for Up North News WI on your favorite social media feed and be part of our conversation there as well. And you can get our daily newsletter by clicking on newsletter in the top banner of our website. That again, upnorthnewswi.com. I would be remiss if I did not mention, as I failed to do in the last hour, that Civic Media is celebrating the growth of its network by giving away $1 million in advertising. It is a contest, a giveaway that starts next week, Thursday, January 26th at 9 in the morning, when you can start to fill out an application for your small business, not just for advertising space, but a chance to work with the Civic Media team to design a radio advertising campaign. So this is some valuable stuff that a lot of small businesses never get a chance to take advantage of, and this is your chance to do it. So look for Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and if you want the full rules and details, go to civicmedia.us, and there you can click on the shows and learn more about them and follow them as a podcast. You can click on the stations and find out which one is closest to you, since we're adding stations all the time. And specifically for the contest, civicmedia.us/million, and let folks know you heard about it on Up North News Radio. The Congress of the United States is going to be borderline ridiculous in the House of Representatives now that Republicans have taken over and that Kevin McCarthy has sold whatever was left of his soul to the extreme right wing. And unfortunately, it means that folks who had been seen as voices of moderation can't do that, because they'll run afoul of, you know, the monkeys that are now running the circus. And for perhaps nobody is that more glaring than Congressman Mike Gallagher, Republican from the Green Bay area. Recall, he's the one who was a borderline hero to some folks on January 6th when he recorded a video talking to President Trump directly and telling him how bad this is and that he needs to, you know, be bolder and take action. Well, that's not the Gallagher that serves Northeast Wisconsin any further. There was, you'll recall, this little problem with Donald Trump engaged in a heist of confidential to top secret documents, hundreds of them stored at a golf course building that is not designed as a residence where people can come through willy-nilly. Compare that to the handful of documents that Joe Biden has apparently mishandled at his private residence. And you just look at what people are saying on the Republican side about Biden, and then compare that to their silence, virtual or near silence about Trump. This, for example, is Mike Gallagher recording a video in his garage.
Okay, let's do a thought experiment. Go into your garage, look around. What do you keep in your garage? I got my grill back there because it's winter. I have daughters, so I have all sorts of little girl toys, like this little princess bicycle thing. I have my beautiful Aaron snow thrower. I have more kids stuff here, if I can get that going on. Yes, little pink bicycle there. The point is, you don't have anything of value, true value, in your garage. You don't keep sensitive documents, birth certificates, You don't keep cash. Okay. You certainly don't keep classified.
Let's see if I can. I'm going to scroll through his Twitter feed here and see if he recorded this same video with Donald Trump. I don't see it. But if I scroll through this particular post, I certainly see people calling Gallagher out for the hypocrisy of this. Aaron, maybe you'd like to read one or two of those?
Now do Trump. Oh, you can't. You just sold your integrity and humanity for an appointment by Kevin McCarthy. Or we've got another one here. Got to scroll down a little bit. Why so many posts? It's not for your constituents. Who are you trying to impress? Fox News? That does nothing for me. You are useless as my representative.
and on it goes. Because again, as we've mentioned before and will again, yes, if you're in the right-wing media bubble, you are celebrating this because this gotcha moment. When if you're not just watching right-wing media, you understand how out of balance the two things are, and that, you know, simply trying to make Biden's mishandling of documents look equal to Trump just makes you look silly. But this is something Gallagher has been building toward. He had said to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a few weeks back that there was something that was consuming his sole focus. And I wondered, what is it? Is it inflation? Is it the rural economy? Is it healthcare? Is it schools? No. He told the Journal Sentinel it's the Chinese Communist Party. And that's why he's now chairing this committee that he says is going to, you know, expose misdeeds by China, when really it's just going to hamper administration efforts to try to have a decent relationship between the two countries, and perhaps do something even more dangerous if it's too adversarial. We'll have more after this. You're up north. If you are too young to know the song Shannon by Henry Gross, consider yourself lucky. Somehow in the 70s, we had a hit pop song about a dead dog. It's also a song that Casey Kasem made famous by having an off-air tirade about having to do a long-distance dedication about somebody's dog dying. Just look up Casey Kasem blooper. I don't know that I have the bleeped out version, but it's worth your time if you've never heard it. And now we have fake Congressman George Santos apparently stealing money from a dying dog, which I'm going to tell you about in just a bit. But I want to finish up my thoughts on Congressman Mike Gallagher and this new China committee that he's going to be chairing. Gallagher had mentioned to the Journal Sentinel back around the holidays. He said that, "I do think right now my highest and best use is forging a bipartisan consensus around how we beat the Chinese Communist Party in this new Cold War." I don't know if he has any clue how dangerous it is to talk like that, to go ahead and say that there is a Cold War on right now. Is there a rivalry? Is there economic adversarial relationships? Yes. Are we pushing for better human rights in China? Yes, though not as much as we should be. If you're going to go ahead and call it a war, you're going to go ahead and make things worse. And he is. He's already talking about how one of the things that needs to be done is to work more aggressively to move more weaponry into Taiwan. He said, "I don't think we should provoke for no reason," but he also says that this is in line with President Theodore Roosevelt's foreign policy of speaking softly and carry a big stick. Maybe that was the right strategy 120 years ago, when Teddy Roosevelt had a navy that was unparalleled in the world and could basically do whatever it wanted around the globe. We have a masterful, wonderful Navy now, but I dare say we can't just park it off the coast of China and somehow browbeat them into bending to our will. It's not that simple. It can't be done with the simplistic work of a committee that is not actually, as Gallagher says, going to forge a bipartisan consensus. He says that the committee will expose supply chain issues. It will emphasize the U.S. dependence on China for things like pharmaceutical ingredients, rare earth minerals, and weapons components. In other words, Gallagher is going to play the role of Captain Obvious and describe to us how capitalism fell in love with a communist regime because of its willingness to put profits ahead of people and resources. We know all of this already. So we can either have that bipartisan work together on a China policy. We can, as has been done in the past, you know, rally around what the current administration is doing. Or we can do what I predict is going to happen here, and that is to have one branch of government, one part of one branch of government, actively undermining the president of the United States and the administration's efforts to forge better ties with China. Because again, much like the other non-Americans that Republicans love to target, which would be people coming in from Mexico and Central America, you're not doing your job as a Republican politician if you're trying to solve any of these problems. You're doing your job as a politician if you're always exacerbating things, if you're always describing the very next risk around the next corner from China or from illegal immigrants. If I thought that there was any serious move toward bipartisan compromise on this, I would tell you so. But I have watched so many efforts to have a better agreement on legal immigration, on making it easier for people to come to this country legally, to go through the process, and to those who came here as undocumented immigrants, to go through a process that eventually lets them become tax-paying citizens. And so many times, the right wing of the Republican Party has broken up those deals. And so there is no benefit of the doubt to give to the right wing when it comes to wanting to actually solve the problem of immigration. It benefits them to have it keep looking like a problem unless or until they get the ultimate power to just impose a right-wing solution like abortion. For years and years, we heard, oh, Republicans aren't going to do anything, you know, about abortion. It's all talk. They just want to keep it a problem. Until they could find a way to actually get enough people on the U.S. Supreme Court to impose their minority will on Americans who, by an overwhelming majority, want abortion to be safe and legal. So if we can't trust them on abortion, if we can't trust them on immigration reform, what makes anybody think that we're going to see some kind of bipartisan work toward forging a better relationship with China? If Congressman Gallagher proves me wrong, I'll be first in line to say so. But I think that when we're talking about this about 18 months from now, ahead of the next election, assuming that Gallagher hasn't made things even worse with his rhetoric, I think that that's still all we'll have 18 months from now is rhetoric about how bad China is and not any actual accomplishment. And yet, that being the case, Representative Gallagher is far, 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 far from the bottom of the barrel in Congress. We already are aware of the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Matt Gaetzes and the Paul Gosars and the other clowns who have been given back their committee roles now that Kevin McCarthy is in charge. But even then, we're still not at the bottom of the barrel yet. We get to George Santos, not his real name, but he's lied about everything else. And it continues to be exposed. It was exposed prior to the election, but not enough. Not enough people in the media, not enough Democrats took it seriously. And now that he's won his election, even though New York Republicans want him out, Kevin McCarthy and other congressional Republicans would not dare force him out unless he did something truly awful. I mean, it's one thing to lie about your resume, right? It's one thing to maybe be part of a hedge or of a fund that was engaged in a Ponzi scheme, which he's being accused of, or to even have campaign contributions that are tied to a Russian oligarch, which we're learning this week is also the case, that the cousin of a Russian oligarch put thousands upon thousands of dollars into political groups that benefited George Santos. Even all of those things have not led to enough pressure from congressional Republicans for him to get out. But maybe this will. New headline. George Santos allegedly took $3,000 from the GoFundMe for a dying dog. Santos was tapped to help a veteran whose dog needed life-saving surgery, but he disappeared with the money. The story was reported first by Patch yesterday. It said in the story that disabled Navy veteran Richard Ostoff was raising money for his dog Sapphire back in 2016 when he was connected to Friends of Pets United. It's an organization that George Santos led, but under his other name, Anthony DeVolder. He introduced himself as Anthony DeVolder at a pro-Trump event. So after Santos and Ostoff connected, he, Santos, allegedly helped the veteran raise $3,000 on GoFundMe. He then deleted the fundraiser and disappeared with the money. And while Santos has claimed that Friends of Pets United was a tax-exempt organization that he founded in 2013, the IRS could not find a record of a registered charity under that name. Ostoff said, "He stopped answering my texts and calls." Sharing screenshots of his Facebook posts on the matter, Ostoff explained that his dog would later die in 2017 without access to the life-saving treatment that the dog needed, so he was unable to afford euthanasia and cremation. The veteran said, "I had to panhandle. It was one of the most degrading things I've ever had to do." Ostoff was later helped, according to this Rolling Stone article, by Michael Bull, a local police sergeant who led New Jersey Veterans Network to reach out to Santos after the GoFundMe money disappeared. Bull said he contacted Santos and told him, "You're messing with a veteran," and that he needed to give back the money or use it to give Ostoff another dog. But Bull says that Santos was totally uncooperative on the phone. That's where we sit right now with George Santos, a Republican serving in Congress because Kevin McCarthy needs his vote to hold on to his very slim grasp of the speaker's chair, stealing money from the dying dog of a veteran. As I mentioned, New York Republicans have seen more than enough of this. And just yesterday, Long Island Republican fellow freshman Congressman Nick LaLotta called for George Santos's campaign accounts to be immediately frozen so that authorities could investigate the fraud that included donations to his campaign. In a statement, LaLotta expressed concern that Santos, quote, may drain his campaign account before multiple investigations into his campaign finances wrap up. He adds that any money left in his account should be returned to the contributors that he duped. This is a fellow Republican, newly elected member of Congress who has more testicular fortitude than just about every other congressional Republican from across the country. There is, again, no shortage of people who have had to resign or be pushed out in disgrace. But then there's always those shameless few who will stay until the very end and be sheltered by the powerful people who want to protect them. Before we take a break and talk to Sarah Godlewski and Chris Taylor, a note that Governor Tony Evers will be delivering his State of the State address next week, Tuesday night. And last night, folks in Superior got a chance to talk to the governor and express their priorities for the next state budget. The listening session was held at UW-Superior. There were residents who went to the Yellow Jacket Union on campus to share their thoughts with Evers and with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. They talked about the need to support health care, the need to support education, the need to support child care, transportation, broadband. I don't think there was anybody in there that said, could you please make a flat tax so that the wealthiest in Wisconsin could get a massive tax cut and the rest of us would have to pay for it or have services cut. I'm pretty sure that was not said in Superior last night. Let's take a break and visit with Sarah Godlewski and Judge Chris Taylor right after this on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Women Win Wisconsin, that's the name of the group formed by Sarah Godlewski, the former state treasurer, and it's a theme she wants to continue, in part by helping us amplify the voices and the work of women making a difference in their communities or statewide. And today, she and I are joined by someone familiar to those of us who've embarked on public service, those of us who've put their names out there on election ballots. Chris Taylor is a Dane County Circuit Judge, a former state assembly rep, and is now running unopposed for a Court of Appeals post. Sarah and Chris, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Pat.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, Chris, it's so good to see you again. Again, she and I served together during my 2006 to 2010 time in the Capitol. And Sarah, of course, no stranger to the state Capitol as well. But now all of us onto new endeavors in other posts for Taylor. It's as a judge and soon to be a Court of Appeals position. Sarah, really appreciate you joining us every so often to help highlight some of these women doing great work around the state. So Sarah, let's start with you and your decision to highlight Chris and other women who decide to put themselves out there on the ballot.
Well, I think that we have seen more and more how important the courts and their roles have been playing in our everyday lives. Most recently, we have seen how the overturning Roe v. Wade and how that has impacted us right here in Wisconsin pretty significantly. And I think one of the sometimes unknown facts about Wisconsin is that we elect our judges and we have a say in who represents us and how important that is, whether it is from the Supreme Court to the Court of Appeals. And more, I think their role has always been important, but I think we are learning more and more about their impact on our lives. And with Chris now running to be part of the Court of Appeals, I just thought it was really important for Chris to share a little bit more about why she's running for this this seat, why it matters, and to kind of shine a light on it.
Yeah, Chris, why don't you fill us in about a bit of your bio and why you ran for judge and why running for Court of Appeals, all the importance of that.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me. My background is very varied. I started as a practicing attorney, representing people in family law cases, went to Planned Parenthood, where I was the public policy director for 8 years, and then ran for the state assembly. I was there for 9 years. I really focused on people's rights, constitutional rights, women's rights, the rights of people of color. And then when I kind of unfortunately saw the impact of such hyper partisanship, I really began to think I'm not getting what I want to get done here. And so I began to look at other opportunities for that in government. And I'd always been very fascinated by the courts as an attorney. Some of my icons were the women serving on the court, whether it be Shirley Abramson or Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so I've been now on the trial court. I was appointed by Governor Evers in 2020, then elected in 2021. And then this opportunity came up for the Court of Appeals, which is probably the most important court no one's ever heard of. You know, it's like go around and talk to people about what the heck is the Court of Appeals? So that's the court that was created actually by the legislature to help the state Supreme Court manage appeals. And people have the right to appeal. We see a high volume of appeals, but the Court of Appeals makes sure that the trial courts are doing everything right, respecting people's constitutional rights, giving people a fair trial. And so we're really, the Court of Appeals is really a court of error correcting, making sure that our trial courts are functioning in a fair and a fair way that is applying the law fairly and equally across the board.
And it was interesting, Chris, because I will tell you, one of the functions that is talked about is law defining and law development. Like, you are really in this role that isn't just necessarily ruling on cases, but defining what law is. And that precedent, I think, is so important.
It really, really is important. Most cases don't make it up to the state Supreme Court that are appealed. They stop in the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals, everyone has a right to appeal to the Court of Appeals if they're not satisfied with what happened in the trial court. So unless the Supreme Court takes up the case, if the Court of Appeals rules on an issue that might be unclear or not defined, or there might be some conflict, that's the law of the land. So it's an incredibly important court. And that's why I'm interested in it.
So
it would help if I unmuted my microphone, wouldn't it? So I was going to say, by way of background, the Court of Appeals, we're all familiar with county judges. We're all familiar with state level Supreme Court. The appeals courts are, there's actually four of them. The state is broken up into districts. Everything up north is in a district. Much of central and southwest Wisconsin is in a district. Much of eastern and southeastern Wisconsin is in a district. And Milwaukee County is its own district because of population. And so it is in District 4, Chris, that you're running unopposed. That's the area that includes Dane County, correct? And stretches up to Clark County here in western Wisconsin.
Exactly. It's a huge district. It's 24 counties. It's really the entire south central part of the state, a piece of the western part as well, and then a huge part of the central part of the state. It doesn't go as far north. There's another district that covers that that's based in Wausau. But a huge district, 24 counties, and sees a very high volume of appeals. So it's really important to me that I get out in these communities, which is what I'm doing right now, even though I'm running unopposed, to talk to people about the courts, to get their feedback about what their impressions are. I think we need to do a lot more education about what courts do and why they're so important, how they impact people's lives every day.
It is that kind of civics 101 that is necessary, and that you and Sarah are uniquely positioned to do as people who have run for office. And so you know the importance of not, you know, campaigning by press release, but actually getting out and talking to people. In each of these four districts, there are it's 16 judges from four districts. So we're really talking about quite a few judges that you stagger those terms. There are two seats up around the state this year. Chris Taylor's running in one of them. Chris, before we turn toward, you know, the whole decision to serve in office and such, I want to ask you this about Court of Appeals races. Now, you're running unopposed, but there was a race recently, I want to say last year, that got rather contentious. And we know how contentious state Supreme Court races have been, dating back to Michael Gableman's campaign in 2008. Do you have a concern that, obviously not your race, but in the future, more of these Court of Appeals races are going to become increasingly political, expensive, and nasty?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as I said, I saw the cost of intense partisanship in the legislature and how bad that was for people. It is so imperative. I mean, we already see what's happening at the state Supreme Court level with these races. They're so expensive. They're so politicized. And I think that's a really bad thing, honestly. The courts are to be independent and impartial. That is fundamental. Courts need to be that way because we not just decide oftentimes what the law is, how it's applied, but we hold other branches of the government accountable to what they do. And so it's very important that we're not just an arm of another branch of government, that we fairly, impartially, and with an eye towards justice always look at what is being done with that independent eye. And when that is compromised, it does compromise our judicial system, no doubt about that.
Well, I think the other important piece is in this kind of law defining, law development role that the Court of Appeals plays in our state. It's how long are judges serving? And they're serving for 10 years. And I think that's another really important piece is that we have an opportunity to make sure that we are electing judges that are going to uphold our rights, to fight for our rights, because if not, they're not there for a 2-year term or a 4-year term. They're there for a decade, which is a long time.
It is a long time. Think of your life a decade ago.
Right.
It's fundamentally different than it is now.
I mean, it's in knowing how much can come to the court within that decade. I just think it's really important. And oftentimes in the spring, when these elections are held, so this election is going to be held in April, where we are voting on these judicial opportunities, these judicial seats. This is, we see maybe a quarter of the voter turnout than what we saw in November. And so I think that's another important piece is that we've got to make sure people know about the courts and that they come out and turn out to vote.
Right. Absolutely. April. They have control over who's elected. The people do. My opinion, of course, is that our role is to protect and expand people's rights, not take them away. And so that is my philosophy. That is what I think is so fundamental about courts. We are the protector of people's rights. Now, the Court of Appeals is a 6-year term. The state Supreme Court is that 10-year term. But that is an incredibly, incredibly important election. When you think about the issues that could come before that court, issues of democracy, issues of voting, issues of do women actually have the right to make their personal private health care decisions? Is there a state constitutional protection for that? Those are issues coming before this court. If people care about those issues, which I hope they do, and I think we've seen they do, they need to turn out for these races and decide what kind of justice are we going to elect? Are we going to elect justices to the Supreme Court and to the Court of Appeals that are just an extension of another branch of government that are infected by partisanship and don't really care about people, quite frankly? Courts are about people. Let's not forget that. Courts are about the people.
And Chris, I think that's a really good pivot with our kind of we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to hit on two constitutional amendments that we are seeing different groups in the legislature push. One is about cash bail, and we are seeing that Republicans are really trying to get this cash bail reform on the ballot. But then the other one is Governor Evers just announced yesterday he wants an advisory constitutional amendment about asking Wisconsinites, do you want this 1849 abortion ban repealed? So can you maybe share, Chris, too, how these constitutional amendments and the courts and kind of what folks should be knowing about?
Sure. Well, I already, you know, referenced that the issue of abortion in the state of Wisconsin is probably going to be coming before the state Supreme Court at some point. We have a case now in the trial court. And so this issue is critically important. It is going to be probably ultimately decided in the courts and decided by who is elected to this state Supreme Court. That is going to decide the issue of whether women have the right to make the most personal private healthcare decisions. So that's incredibly important. In terms of bail, bail is so misunderstood. We don't use cash bail a lot here in Dane County. I try not to use it, quite frankly, because I do think it creates a system of haves and have-nots. What most people don't know, though, is in the initial setting of bail for trial courts, I actually cannot look at whether the person poses a risk to the public in deciding whether cash bail is appropriate. The only statutory basis for me to set cash bail right now, at least initially in a case, is there a risk the person will not appear? I can use non-economic conditions like GPS monitoring, like, you know, reporting to pretrial services, doing alcohol monitoring to monitor whether someone's a risk to the public to impose those things. But I cannot use cash initially, at least, to hold somebody because I think they're dangerous. And I think courts, I think trial courts feel very differently about that. I personally would like to see cash bail go. And I don't think necessarily it's a bad decision to let judges look at the public safety issue in initially setting bail. But I'm not taking a position on either of these, on the constitutional amendment on this.
No, but you've made clear this is an issue that is very fair to talk about in areas of reform rather than simply politicizing it as others have done. I know we're supposed to wrap, but can you both stick around for a few more minutes? We got another topic or two to get to.
Absolutely.
I sure appreciate that. And I know Todd Alba won't mind either. We'll still check in with him yet before we go. But first, we have to take this break on Up North News Radio. Well, with apologies to Todd Alba, although I understand he's running a little late as well. So his show will still start on time at 8:06, and then we'll hear from him there. But that just gives us extra time to talk to Sarah Godlewski and Chris Taylor. Chris is a Dane County judge who's running for a seat on the Court of Appeals. We've had a great discussion about bail reform and that there are ways to do it and ways that have been tried in the past and maybe need to be tried again on more of a less partisan basis, shall we say. But Sarah, as you know, part of the reason we wanted to talk about this is to talk to, again, I cite this statistic all the time without having the source, but that men self-recruit to run for office. And women have to be asked on the average 6 times before they agree to run. I don't know what it was like for you. I don't know what it was like for you, Chris, but I guess I keep bringing that up because I feel like people like the two of you who not just serve but thrive as an example to others could probably have some words to say about understanding the difficulty that goes into that decision, the difficulty that comes with service, but why you do it anyway. So, Sarah, let me toss it to you first so that maybe if you want to frame it differently in asking the same question to Judge Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really hard question that you have to have with your family because running a campaign completely consumes your entire life. I mean, I was on the campaign trail for about a year and a half, and a lot of time my bedtime with my 3-year-old son, Hartley, was a FaceTime video that we would have in the car. And my spouse was the one that had to take on a lot of these child caring responsibilities, dropping him off and making sure that he had what he needed. And so it's a big family commitment. But for me, that's exactly why I wanted to do it, is I looked at how many women under 60 were in the US Senate, and there weren't really any. And that's why we don't have paid family leave or affordable childcare, because we don't have those voices at the table. And as the saying goes, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so that for me, looking at Hartley and trying to struggle with childcare and, you know, paid family, like these are exactly the reasons why I was running. And I don't know, Chris, like for you, when you looked at the court and you looked at fighting for rights and your experiences as a mom, really played into that.
Oh, sure. I mean, in a lot of ways, you do this for your children. You can't stand a future for them where we don't have strong public schools, where our environment is polluted, where basic democracy is not respected and is attacked. And I think in a large part, certainly when I first ran for the assembly, you do it for your kids. You do it because you want a country and a state and a community that is equitable, that is fair, that is healthy and safe for people. So to a large extent, you know, that's why you do it. You do it because you care. You do it because you're motivated. You have an intense passion to serve. You want to improve people's lives. And part of that is making sure the future for your kids is the best possible future.
And it's, again, something that I don't think can be said enough. That and look, same can be said for dads and grandpas. Trust me, there's decisions to be made. But it's all the better when we have a more well-rounded discussion, shall we say. And there's a reason why we're talking about an 1849 abortion ban written by a bunch of, you know, white guys in the 19th century, because that's where all the power was. And I think that the more folks can hear from people like the two of you, you know, the better it's going to be for elected posts all over, from school boards and county boards all the way up to courts of appeals and the state Supreme Court and whatever else the two of you are doing next. And I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out you guys are doing great things next. So I really appreciate you taking some time to be with us here, Judge Taylor, and, you know, wish you all the best as you keep talking to people in that appeals court campaign.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to chat with you all this morning. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. And Sarah, we're going to talk again in a couple of weeks here. Really appreciate you helping us amplify and raise up some folks that frankly provide a good example to everybody. And it means a lot to our listeners, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for covering this, Pat. And again, I just want to echo, I'm excited to have Chris on the Court of Appeals, because I know she will make a fantastic judge for our state.
Oh, without a doubt there. All right. Thanks to both of you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care now.
All right. Let's turn over to Todd Alba, who's joining us, I think, from on the phone here. Todd, you still with us?
Absolutely, Pat. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks. How about you?
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Madison. Actually, sun today, and with them snow tonight. So we're getting everything down here today.
Yeah, you really are. Now, I was on vacation last week. I've had all kinds of scheduling ups and downs, but so have you over the past 30 days. And the one common theme we seem to have in our weekly conversations on Wednesdays is this: are you in quarantine yet again?
No, thank God I am not in quarantine. No, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was hanging out last night. I watched the Badger basketball game. They got a nice win by 3 points. And my youngest godson was at my place hanging out with me. And we had a great conversation. We hung out, probably stayed up a little bit too late. And then Todd somehow misplaced his keys to his truck. And the older I get, Pat, I'm going to have like a tray or something to put my keys on, because I'm like, where the heck? And finally, but they were under a hat, basically.
They're under a hat. So, yes,
at least he did find them.
They're under. Yeah, exactly. And so
he's here now.
I'm walking into the Civic Media Studios now, because I thought, if I don't find,
I hit the button
keys,
to unlock the door, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I don't know where.
We're just doing play-by-play of Todd entering the workspace because he's lost his keys.
Right.
Which I can say from personal experience, I have that tray now. I have done that enough times that I did set up that tray by the door, by the garage, and that's where the keys are every time, because I did not want to be somebody who had to look, you know, in the crisper drawer of the refrigerator to see if that's where I put my keys. There's a joke here at the house that if you ever can't find something, the other person inevitably says, you might have to move something. And in your case, it's lifting a hat.
That's exactly what I had to do. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, Todd, you're losing it. And so, I mean, it's like, and I'm like, I know I'll make my show okay. I'm like, oh crap, I got Pat, I got to be on Pat's show. So I told Aaron, I said, we're going to have to call in.
That's all right. It works. The telephone works. We appreciate you being here. I'm going to show up for the first few minutes of your show, if I remember, because honest to God, it's conceivable that when I go into the kitchen right now to go refill the coffee cup, I might get distracted by some shiny object and I'll forget to come back here in a few minutes. It's possible. It really does. So we appreciate everybody listening to Senior Talk with Todd and Pat.
Exactly.
And
that's what it is. They're sponsored by Depends. Todd will be modeling those later on the show.
Exactly. All right, Todd, thank you. That's it for today. Tomorrow, Hometown Health with the many benefits of music and music education. You can follow us all day long, upnorthnewswi.com. Sign up for our daily newsletter there. You can follow me on Facebook. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North, or just Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Earl Ingram is next in Waukesha, Oshkosh and Green Bay, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba in Richland Center, Wausau and Amory along the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you Thursday.